Welcome to today's episode. Here's a quick trailer for you. Be sure to stick around and catch the full episode.
As far as military service goes, I often say there is no amount of money that you could pay me that would replace my military service, and you couldn't pay me any amount of money to be back in the Navy. My healing journey really started in 2017. I was basically standing at the top of the mountain. I had done everything that I was supposed to do that society told me would make me happy. I stood at the top of the mountain and there's nothing up there but a cold howling wind. Pain is a great teacher and I love learning the hard way, but I'm trying to quit. True wealth is only an internal experience. We chase external success trying to create this sense inside of us, and the eternal punchline is that it's already there available for any of us, right? In the present moment. Turns out I have way less than $100 million and I'm living my dream life now. It turns out that you don't need $100 million to be free. You just have to get really clear on what is the life I want to live? What does freedom look like for me? I don't want to burst anybody's bubble, but it turns out that money is really just a Trojan horse. It's a way to get people to think more deeply about what actually makes a rich life. And the reality is that like one bad apple could actually ruin an experience for everybody else, right? I would say that the community is really for anyone who is ready to stop putting off their life in service of some goalpost that continues to move. And they want to be the author of their own journey in the present moment.
Have you ever wondered what event leaders are doing right now to pack their rooms and convert attendees into high-ticket clients? Welcome to the High Profit Event Show, the podcast for experts who want to maximize profits and impact through live events. I'm Rudy Rodriguez, and each week I interview industry leaders to share what's working right now when it comes to filling your events, engaging your audience, and getting clients to enroll into your high-ticket programs. So stick around and be sure to hit that subscribe button. Welcome to today's episode of the High Profit Event Show. Today, I have a special guest with us here, a fellow alumni of the United States Naval Academy, 5 years my senior at the Academy. I graduated the class of 2003, Mr. Mike Brown. Welcome, sir.
Hey, Rudy. Thanks for having me, man. Stoked to be here.
Dude, it's fun to have you on here, man. I'm really curious to hear your perspective on live events and how that ties into wealth philosophy, because I know that's your area of expertise. And it's so cool that in the circles that we run in, it's not every day you run into a Bose School graduate. So I just think it's really unique and interesting that you and I met at an event, but 5 years ago, roughly. I think it was Elliot Rose Control Room Mastermind. And I love the fact that you were a Super Hornet guy as well. And unlike maybe a lot of our brothers and sisters from the Naval Academy, you left the box and you went on to be an entrepreneur and you went on to pursue your interest and went into the oil and gas industry as an investor, created a firm and exited for 8 figures plus, and continued on as an entrepreneur to go and educate other people on wealth philosophies and wealth principles, which is super cool. And for those of you guys who are like, what's an F-18? Well, an F-18 Super Hornet is that super fast jet that you saw in the movie Top Gun 2 Maverick.
That's it.
Yeah. Actually, my two roommates from the Academy, Nick Klaus and Mike Scott, they both went on to fly the F-18. And my buddy Mike, he rode the gray jet as long as he could. And then when they said he couldn't ride it anymore, he went over to the Air Force. And he started writing the F-16 over there. Cool. He's been flying now for like over 15 years. He's a lucky guy.
Yeah, it was a great career. It seems like a lifetime ago.
Yeah, we'll have to hear some stories today on the show. I'll have to pull something out of you here. In addition, it's just background for our guest here so they can learn more about you right away. Mike also runs the Money Stories podcast. So we'll put a link to that here around this podcast. People who listen to podcasts, they like this one, they'll go listen to another one. And you speak on stages about money, sovereignty, and living richly in the present. You live now with your wife, Claire, and your two kids there in Morrison, Colorado, in your beautiful home that you custom built and designed to be able to host events at your home. And you've been the host of the Unbreakable Wealth Workshop and live event, which has been the pinnacle experience for your community since 2022. Super excited to learn more from you today, man.
Yeah, I'm happy to share.
It's not every day I get an F-18 guy on the show, so I know people think that's cool. I'd love to, if you don't mind sharing a little bit of background of maybe just something cool about your experience in the Navy and how eventually that led you to becoming an entrepreneur, because I think that's a good connection for our listeners and a cool thing to hear.
Yeah, look, as far as military service goes, I often say there is no amount of money that you could pay me that would replace my military service, and you couldn't pay me any amount of money to be back in the Navy. So I think it's a great place to be from. I love my time there as a young man flying Super Hornets. I think it's one of the coolest things a human can do. But at the same time, military service comes with a great cost, and lost a lot of friends along the way. And over time, recognized that there were aspects that I was struggling with post-service. And so that healing journey has been foundational to my evolution, both as an entrepreneur and a coach. So you can file my military service under It's Complicated. It comes with a lot of amazing positive aspects and not without cost.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing this openly, Mike, because oftentimes it's overlooked. Either it's overlooked or underlooked as far as like what the cost and the trade-off is for that. Yeah, it can be glamorous. Definitely, I'm in the same boat as you. I wouldn't trade it for any amount of money, and I definitely would not want to go back for any amount of money. That's a great place to be from. But for me personally, it definitely has given me the opportunity to appreciate a bit more of some of the freedoms that I know even today, I sometimes still take for granted, but I remember, especially having conversations like this or talking to people who are still in or people that are going in, it's like, yeah, like freedom isn't free. And that's not just sovereignty of our country, but it's also individual freedom. Like, we have to work really hard as entrepreneurs to get to a point where we can appreciate some of the freedoms that perhaps you are able to have right now and people that are listening to this podcast have in their businesses as well. Mike, and you also pointed to a little bit of the post-service healing and recovery process. Again, that's something that oftentimes isn't really highlighted too closely. And I know it's not the topic of the show per se, but I do think it's relevant and interesting because ultimately people are running events because they want to help people. And oftentimes it's, hey, we want to help you with your money because that's what people want. But in reality, they come to events and we discover they have some pseudo-psycho, whatever, in their bodies, in their minds, in their spirit, some problems that are holding them back. And it's not just their money. Would you be open to sharing a little bit about your journey and that process, that healing process that you kind of were alluding to there?
Yeah, definitely, because I think it's foundational. And when we talk about the types of events I'm running, they really are born of this experience. And so my healing journey really started in 2017. I was basically standing at the top of the mountain. I had done everything that I was supposed to do that society told me would make me happy. Went and tested myself in combat. I flew jets, the pinnacle of human performance. Got out, founded a company, and hadn't quite sold it at that point, but was really at this place where I was standing at the peak of success. And I woke up the next day and I was still the same person. I went, oh no, like everything that was supposed to make me happy. I've got the house, I've got the cars, I've got the money, I've got the success. And here I am. And there's still this hole inside of me. Like, now what? Now what do we do? And as my friend Jeff Birmingham likes to say, I stood at the top of the mountain and there's nothing up there but a cold howling wind. And so I started the hard work of going, okay, if all of this external stuff, if all of these achievements, if this worldly success didn't make me happy, then what's going to? And started working with coaches, and I was fortunate to support some veterans organizations specifically that were focused on psychedelic assisted therapy for treatment of PTSD, and basically started going down the rabbit hole of personal development, healing, learned how to meditate. And that was really the start of my healing journey. Now we're nearly 10 years in.
Well, thanks for sharing all that, Mike. You hit on quite a few different things there. One of which that jumped out to me right away was the psychedelic therapy. And I think that's a topic that is in some circles a bit taboo, definitely taboo in the circles that you and I came from. And I'll just mention my own experience here for this audience. And it's something I haven't talked about ever on the show, but being in the military, they're very strict. I mean, you have at the Naval Academy, when I was there, I don't know what it's like for you, Mike, but it's like you have more than three drinks and you blow more than 0.08, like goes grounds for dismissal. So they were extremely strict on even the legal substances, much less the thought of anything beyond that. And so I was programmed very much so to think that just about everything that's out there is bad. It's illegal. It's bad. It's evil. It's immoral, et cetera. And I also had some of that in religious programming. But it wasn't until I, too, was going on my own entrepreneurial and then eventually healing journey, actually, because of Elliot Rowe, coincidentally, now that I think about it, he's the one who told me about his experience specifically with psychedelics combined with hypnotherapy and how it was the most powerful healing modality for him that started to be in my mind, wait, is this not all bad? Is this not all evil? Is this something, could there be actually something for it from this that can be helpful or healing? And I eventually had my own experience specifically with psilocybin, and that really opened up my perspective in quite a few things and started me down a path of a personal growth that I didn't know was available. And I now know that there's a lot of misinformation, I think, out there when it comes to this subject. So anybody listening to this, like, whoa, why are we talking about psychedelics? I would say, do your own homework, do your own research. Don't take anybody's word for it. But one of the books that for me was a good education piece was How to Change Your Mind, because I really had to do a lot of research before I even touched anything of the sort. And that was really helpful. So thanks, Mike, for taking this, helping take, go down a little tangent here.
Yeah, absolutely. No, they can be a critical part of the healing process. What I would just also point out for anybody listening is that these medicines are incredibly powerful tools for opening the doors of perception, for maybe blowing the lid off of some things that have been bottled up. The Navy's really good at teaching compartmentalization as a framework for keeping you safe in combat. And by the way, that's a really effective technique for staying safe in combat. Unfortunately, they don't necessarily teach people how to unwind that compartmentalization. So these medicine and psychedelic compounds should be held with deep reverence. This is not a casual undertaking. And then the other piece that's incredibly critical is the integration on the backside, doing the work to translate that experience into your everyday life. And I think that's a part that's often overlooked. They really go hand in hand. And so for anybody wanting to go down that particular rabbit hole, just make sure that you do a lot of research, find a trusted provider, and then make sure you have a plan for integrating the experience on the backside.
100%. I need to emphasize all those points that he made. It's oftentimes some of these substances can be found in recreational use cases or found amongst circles of people who are using things recreationally, and they get confused. They don't have the reverence or the appreciation or the sacrament or the intentionality that they're meant to have, at least from a healing perspective. And I think having it from a trusted source with a trusted facilitator and a good integration process is super critical to actually get the medicine that is possible from the experience. Mike, I've come across people who've like done things recreationally or done things with the wrong facilitator or didn't have integration. They had a bad experience, and all of a sudden in their mind, it became all bad. So I just want to emphasize everything that you said.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, great tangent. Let's bring it back over here to events, and I think it'd be cool to sort of tie some things together. You're a veteran, I'm a veteran. I'm sure you and I probably I have attracted some veteran clients. I imagine you have as well. And how do we tie this together into events and how we have impactful and profitable live events? I know, Mike, you've been running events since 22 in your home around wealth philosophy, wealth psychology, helping people become, I guess, bulletproof financially. Maybe tell us a little bit more about your philosophy at large, your financial philosophy, and how events kind of integrate into that. And then we can talk about tactically what specifically you do with your events.
Yeah, I can start with the genesis of how my first event came to be. So I sold my company in 2019 for a life-changing amount of money, should have never had to work again. And 2 years later, I was waking up more stressed out, full of anxiety. There was days I didn't want to get out of bed to face the day because I was losing a heroic amount of money in a failed business venture, and sort of fell back to the power of debrief from the Navy and went, wait a minute, how did I get here? And number two, like, how can I get myself out of this situation? Like, what happened? And number one is I was deploying my capital into deal after deal after deal. I was really following this old adage, it takes money to make money. I was going all in. I was swinging for the fences. And I was doing that because I thought that's what rich people did. We have this hero culture in our society around venture capital and angel investing. So I thought I was following the playbook. And as I started to educate myself, again, hiring coaches, going to therapy, digging into my own wealth psychology, I realized that I was taking way more risk than I should have been. And I was doing that for a lot of reasons, a lot of them stemming back to my childhood, my military service. I'd been risk on all the time, just trying to feel alive. And that was driving a lot of my decision-making that really wasn't in my best interest. So as I healed my own relationship to money, I decided in the summer of 2022 that sort of a classic, I don't know who needs to hear this, but I have some valuable lessons learned and some battle scars. And I think I'll just put together an event and share what I've learned along the way. And that first event became really the catalyst and the genesis for my coaching work and the online community that I've built today. But it really just started with putting a circle on a date on the calendar and going, hey, I'm going to host 16 of my friends to my home and just teach them what I've learned.
Amazing, man. Yeah. And it sounds like you learned a lot from just that period of time where you were just deploying capital like crazy. And it sounds like you had some things that probably worked and some things that failed, right? Or didn't work as well.
It was definitely, like I said, pain is a great teacher and I love learning the hard way, but I'm trying to quit.
Wow. I'm genuinely curious here. What would you say is like one of the top lessons that you take away from that summer of 22 or just prior to that, between 2019 and 22?
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing is I thought I needed $100 million to be wealthy. And what I realized is that I actually have everything that I already need, because true wealth is only an internal experience. We chase external success trying to create this sense inside of us. And the eternal punchline is that it's already there available for any of us, right? In the present moment. And so how do we sort of balance this Western achievement-based more is better type philosophy with the fact that just being present and waking up and being able to spend time with our family, doing the things that we love that light us up, how do we kind of reconcile that? And the reality is that money should only be used for two things, in my opinion. Number one is to close the anxiety loop of paying bills. Like, we all have to have money to live. So how do I get enough money to live my desired lifestyle and essentially kind of put to bed these open, like if I don't have enough money to pay my rent, like that's going to keep me from living and enjoying the present moment. So step one is, how do I get enough money to kind of step out of that anxiety loop that we all are stuck in? And then beyond that, now how do I use my money to increase joy and fulfillment in the present moment? So it's not necessarily going down this path of renunciation and saying, hey, I want to live like a monk in a cave. Like, in Western society, some money is better than no money. I've been rich and I've been poor. I'm going to choose rich every time, but I need to be using my money in service of the life that I actually want to create.
Yeah. Yeah. So one, close a loop on paying bills, making sure your needs are met, period. And then two, do the things that bring fulfillment and joy. And oftentimes those things are not as expensive or complex as we think they are. That's just the way I'm interpreting what you're saying. The things like enjoying quality things with family, et cetera. And you don't need $100 million to be wealthy.
Yeah, it turns out I have way less than $100 million and I'm living my dream life now. So definitely proof that it's possible.
That's awesome. You know, Mike, it reminds me of an experience that I had. I was in this Tony Robbins group, this mastermind program called Platinum Partners. And one of his events that he held was a finance event. He did it in Sun Valley. And it was a room full of really awesome, in my mind, what I perceived to be very successful, wealthy people. And he asked a similar question, how much do you think you need to have to be wealthy? And I just remember him making an example of someone who rose their hand and they needed to have $1 billion. And someone was like 500 million. And somebody was like 100 million. And then he actually took the time, he was making a point, he took the time to actually help. I think it was like the person needed 100 million. I think that's what it was. He drilled down and figured, okay, what is it actually that makes you happy? What is it you actually want and need? And what amount of assets and cash flow is actually required to cover that? And it turned out that generally most people in the room needed half or less of what they thought they needed when they actually took the time to do that. And some people in the room, including one of my buddies sitting right next to me, his jaw hit the ground because he'd been working like a dog as an entrepreneur for 20 plus years, feeling like he didn't have enough. And his jaw hit the ground when he realized he was beyond wealthy. He had more than enough money to meet all the things that he ever wanted to have, but he didn't stop to realize that.
Yeah, I mean, this is essentially the foundation of what I'm doing here, is helping people realize that we are chasing something externally that's always available to us from an internal experience perspective. And most of the entrepreneurs that I work with are already wildly successful by external measures, And the punchline really is that when we drill down into what is the life that you actually want to create, most of the founders that I work with already have enough or are within striking distance of having enough to live the exact dream life that they plot out on paper. But we are constantly bombarded with this message that more is better. If you're not growing, you're dying. Like all of these deeply woven societal beliefs that we never step back and question and go, hey, like, what am I doing here? Like, actually, what am I doing here in the first place? Why did I get into this business? For most of us, it's to create freedom, right? And it turns out that you don't need $100 million to be free. You just have to get really clear on what is the life that I want to live? What does freedom look like for me? And then design a very intentional life around that freedom.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sounds like this is the work that you do for people at your events or in your community.
Yeah, exactly. This is the basis for the community. It's called Unbreakable Wealth. And it's really a place to have conversations about money, meaning, and what makes a truly rich life. And I don't want to burst anybody's bubble, but it turns out that money is really just a Trojan horse. It's a way to get people to think more deeply about what actually makes a rich life. And typically they're coming to answers that have nothing to do with money.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. So you have a community that you've developed, and then your event is the pinnacle experience of that community. Can you tell us a little bit about how your business model, and let's talk about tactically your event and how that fits together with your community? Because I think that's very interesting for people listening to this. Like, hey, I run events, or I'm thinking to run events. Maybe I'm listening to this and I want to run an event that's related to money or finance. I mean, almost every event in some way is, you right. hit on it in some way. So if you don't mind sharing your model and your philosophy with your event.
Yeah. So going back to summer of 22, hosting that first event, number one, I always had a dream of hosting events or retreats. And so I designed my home around hosting retreats. And once I closed and moved into the house, I was like, well, I guess I better do it now. So that was really the catalyst for hosting that first event. And I just remember sitting there on Sunday afternoon as the guests left saying like, oh man, like this was it. I've never felt more alive. I've never felt more fulfilled. I know that what I just put into the world was something of value. It created a unique experience for the attendees and really helped them shift their mindset. And I knew from that point forward that there was there and that this was something I was going to continue to do. And so over the next few years, I think I've hosted 7 at this point here at my home and then other locations around the world. And eventually I took the curriculum that I designed for that initial event. And then I launched an online community so that I could reach more people, so that I could sort of have a more evergreen model of helping bring this work to the world. And what that allowed me to do was that now people coming into my community get that baseline curriculum as sort of the onboarding, as the going in, as the ante. And then beyond that, that allowed me to really open up what was possible in events and do that deeper layer of transformational work. And so the events have evolved over the years to now, I view it as the pinnacle experience of the work that I do in the community, taking a few days off, no cell phone, diving deep, taking space, and really asking the big questions about what matters. I think it's really important that we all do that at least once a year, is take a step back from our businesses, from the daily flow of life, and go, okay, what is it that I really want? And how do I become really intentional about getting that?
Wow, that's big. Especially the no cell phone piece. One of the biggest problems we have today, we're in an attention deficit economy. Everything and everyone is vying, is competing for attention. And that's one of the common problems. It's like if I have an event, people are on their phones or whatever, not present. And it's not like you just say no cell phone policy. Like, hey, there is none.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, so my events are no cell phones during the day, during the thing. And then there's people are allowed to take their cell phones back to their room at night. But I actually invite everyone to put it away for all 3 days if that's something that they're into.
Yeah, yeah. And I personally attended an event a few years ago. It was more of a meditative event, so it made sense. But it was very much put the cell phone away for the duration of the experience as the encouragement in the locker. And it was incredible to me how much attention, more free attention I had, just knowing the cell phone wasn't on me, just knowing it was away. And I could really think about those bigger questions, as you're pointing to as well. So for an event leader listening to this, you're wondering, hey, how do I deal with people on themselves, maybe just invite them to literally put it away for the 3 days. And of course, create a good enough experience where it's worth it for them to put it away for that period of time. Mike, you mentioned your event is the pinnacle experience, and I imagine those 3 days are at a premium as far as the investment goes. I think I saw on your website it was $10,000. Is that right?
For the yes. Yeah, the event is $8,500 for a single individual. Man, now you're making me do my prices on the spot. I think maybe $12,500 for a couple to attend, but then with discounts for people that are already in the community, if that makes sense.
Well, a very premium event. I mean, I'd say anything $5,000 or higher for an event is a premium event. This is not a $99 come to the hangout for 3 days type of experience. So this is deep. And I also assume you keep it fairly small group or limited in size?
Yeah. So I designed the event around 16 people for a few reasons. One, because of the physical limitation of space in my home. I really like having the intimate experience here in my home and in the environment that I designed and curated creates a really safe space for people to do that deep transformational work. And I think 16 is sort of a magic number because we can break out into groups of four. And so that's a really nice size, but we can also come together in a circle and still have an intimate experience with everybody else there. So that's kind of the number that I've landed on as the ideal for the way that I format the events currently, but certainly open to changing that in the future as things grow and evolve.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you sharing that, man, because I think that is a premium pricing, but it also is, like I said, premium experience when you have 16 people or so. I think my personal experience has been minimum of 5, maximum of 30 kind of keeps like a good critical mass. But even going above 16, it starts to be harder to separate those clicks and groups, just depending on what your outcomes are. But I love that you keep it at 16 and it keeps the intimate in your home, very personal type of experience. So when it comes to having clients join your program, because this is like a top of mind problem for oftentimes people, is like, hey, how do I enroll people into my $8,500 or $12,500 with a spouse type of experience. What have you found to be like best practices when it's come to inviting people to be part of your premium experience?
Yeah, great question. I mean, number one is, I think you have to believe, right? Like you have to believe deeply in what you're doing, in the transformational power of the nature of work. And then also know that you're truly providing a premium experience. And I sort of disagree with the advice that you hear a lot out there, like fake it till you make it, just raise prices. Like, I actually think that's bullshit. I think that I subscribe to an evidence-based confidence model. And so if you are just starting out, it's actually okay to not be super profitable on your first one. Like, just fill the seats, provide a premium product, get some testimonials, and then start to build over time and raise prices at like as consummate with the value that you're providing. But like, you better be damn sure that you are providing that level of value. And so I think it's really bad advice to just go out and charge a crazy amount on your first event if you're unproven, if you have an unproven model, if you haven't been doing something sort of similar. So number one is like, don't price yourself out of being able to deliver, like over deliver on value. And then the next piece is, again, I think it really depends on the experience that you're providing. Because I don't have to pay for a venue because I own it, I own the venue, I am allowed to go outsize on the culinary experience, the wine experience that's provided. So everything feels ultra luxe, the swag that I provide. I don't want to spoil too many surprises, but like I give a ridiculous swag gift that that blows people's minds because, again, I have the budget to overspend on that sort of ultra luxe type experience. And ultimately, I designed the event that I wish I could attend. And I think that's one of the things that is really great advice for people is like, I would have loved when I was exiting my company to have a 16-person deep dive on how I should structure my finances, how I should use that to create freedom. And then I would want to do it with other like-minded founders with a premium food and wine experience. Like that to me sounds like a rad event that I would attend. So that's what I made.
Nice, dude. Yeah. Make the event that you want to attend. That makes sense. You know, you're going to put a lot of time, energy, and effort into design, filling, facilitating, all of that. You might as well enjoy what the heck you're putting together. And that includes, I think, with selecting the people that you bring there for 3 days. Do you mind sharing your experience when it comes to that? Because I imagine you have a little bit of a criteria when you're selecting the people to bring together and how you go about that.
Yeah. Everything is based on mutual fit. So I know a lot of events or masterminds will use an application form as sort of a marketing tactic to say, hey, not everybody gets in, but then they take anybody's money that is willing to pay. Like, this is not that. This is, we're going to apply, we're going to have an interview call and just do a vibe check. I mean, my criteria, yeah, okay, you need to qualify from a certain income and business size level. Typically, it's 7-figure plus founders. But really, it's, would I have a dinner with you outside of this event? Are you interested and interesting? Are you asking questions about other people? Or are you just talking about yourself? Like, if that's going to be it, this is probably not your event. So it's really for curious, intentional, conscious founders. And for me, first of all, I believe that my job is to facilitate the knowledge that this entire group comes. So yes, people are there to learn, but we're also there to learn from them. And all of us have unique experiences. And so I think that the term mastermind really is sort of beaten a dead horse at this point. But like, I want this to be a mastermind experience where not only are you learning from the material and learning about yourself, like you're providing experience to the rest of the group, because to build a 7-figure company plus, like, you have a lot of a wealth of experience that you can provide to other people. And if we can learn from each other, like, I think that's really where the richness is.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I'm hearing you say mutual fit and like an actual vibe check, not just collecting people's money because they're willing to fill out a form and hand it to you. And I know that one of the things that maybe is oftentimes overlooked by people is the work that you're doing to not just determine whether or not they should join your program, but to also figure out who else is going to be a good fit for the other people that are in the program, because you're like the gatekeeper. And that's one of the key value propositions of a true mastermind is, who is the gatekeeper? Who's the one that's organizing and selecting the other minds that are going to be part of this experience? And great to hear that you have a real criteria for it. You're not just collecting cash for anyone who'll throw it your way.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to be the steward of your community. If you're going to be a community builder, you have to really hold that responsibility with intention. And the reality is that like one bad apple could actually ruin an experience for everybody else. If someone is bragging, talking about themselves, it can really derail the experience. And so making sure that the right people are in the room, I think, is one of the biggest responsibilities that anybody who's organizing an event can have.
Yeah, most certainly. And let's talk a little bit about integration post-event, because I think that oftentimes is a subject that isn't super talked about, but I can tell it's important to you. So people come to your event, they 3 days full immersion, not their phones, etc. They've answered some of the big questions in their life, maybe they haven't answered before. How do you go by ensuring that when they leave the event that they continue to get the take the actions and get the results that they're set on getting? Like, what's your approach to that?
Yeah, so because my events are sort of that pinnacle experience for the community, most of the attendees have been in community for some amount of time. That price that I quoted earlier is for people that are just stepping in. But it actually includes I believe, 90-day membership to the community on the backside. So they're going to have that support with weekly calls, with showing up and being in conversation consistently with other founders about not only, because look, I think we've all kind of seen this cycle of you go to an event, you learn a bunch of stuff, you answer big questions, you get really hyped, and then you go back to your life and life smacks you in the face. And 6 months later, you're like, oh man, I was so motivated back then. Like, why didn't I do any of those things? And then the cycle repeats itself. And so how do we secure that permanent and lasting change? Well, I think that is really the power of community and showing up every week and being in that conversation of, okay, I tried to implement this. Here's the challenges that came up around that. What do you guys do when you see these types of challenges pop up? Like, I think that is really critical, is not just walking away with a plan, but walking away with understanding that you're not just going to be able to pull the lever and make all of these things happen. Like, life is messy. It's not a clean, linear, up and to the right type experience. And so when we get off track, when setbacks occur, or when challenges surface, who are we going to lean on in order to make sure that we're still able to stay on track?
Yeah. Yeah. Community, right? The thing is, people leave the event. If they don't have community, they fall back to old ways. And I love that your people are already in community coming in and also have that community support them beyond the event. And someone just getting started, they still have 90 days, perhaps, from that pinnacle experience to be in community. Let's chat a little bit about that community, and maybe we can give people a way to learn more how they can be part of your community. Can you again give us like a 60 seconds on what the community is and what you focus on and who it might be for?
Yeah. So Unbreakable Wealth is really for anybody who has reached some sort of entrepreneurial or financial success. It's not just for founders. We've had artists, we've had athletes, we have more corporate type folks, but essentially you're reaching that inflection point where you have excess money to invest every month. Like that's sort of the low end of the criteria. That typically looks like maybe bringing in 15, 20K a month, but it's actually not a specific financial number. It's more, am I out of struggle and starting to think about becoming the author of my own experience? So that's really the inflection point. And then beyond that, we have sort of the framework is weekly calls, Wednesdays, 10 a.m. Mountain Time. But there's 8 foundational onboarding lessons that people step through that should give them a very deep sense of, okay, what is the life that I want to create? How much money does it take to create that life? What is my plan in order to reach that financial freedom that allows me to become work optional and start increasing my fulfillment? And then once we have that wealth plan in place, now it's really diving into the questions of meaning, purpose, and fulfillment. And how do I continue this journey of self-authorship and creating a truly free and rich life in the present moment? So I would say that the community is really for anyone who is ready to stop putting off their life in service of some goalpost that continues to move, and they want to be the author of their own journey in the present moment.
Awesome, man. And then you also have a newsletter. Is that newsletter one and the same with the community, or is that something?
Yeah, so newsletter is a great way to learn more. I spend anywhere from 2 to 4 hours writing that every week. It's a big part of sharing this philosophy with the world. It's long form, and you can subscribe at unbreakablewealth.com/newsletter.
Okay, we'll be sure to include the link to that here around this audio or video, depending on where people are listening to this. So we'll have that there. Great. And so people can listen to your newsletter, and if they want to apply to be part of your community, what's the step for them there?
Yep. Also there at unbreakablewealth.com. We'll make sure and put that link in the show notes. And if this sounds interesting to you, please reach out. Let's have a conversation. So we'll do that vibe check and go from there.
Awesome, man. Yeah, Mike, this has been super interesting. And I would say definitely a different episode than I would say our typical interview, but I really like that we went down a few different paths per se on today's interview. And I hope someone listened to this, not only found value for themselves, but maybe they know someone who might need to hear this message, whatever rabbit hole that we went down today together. And for my audience here, I know this has been an unconventional interview, but I highly recommend do check out Mike Brown's information, go to his website, check out his newsletter, check out his community. I can tell you from personal experience that what he's pointing to is true. It doesn't matter how much money you make or have. It is not an external game. It is an internal game. And Mike is holding the light bright to help guide people through that journey of finding the joy from within and also creating the financial structures to support living that ideal lifestyle as well. So it's not one or the other, it's both.
Yeah, how do we have both and? I mean, that's really what we're doing here because they're not mutually exclusive.
Yes, you don't have to just be completely impoverished and happy, and you don't have to be completely wealthy and unhappy. It's like, how can you have the wealth and have the joy and the happiness and fulfillment? Like, any kind of just final words of advice for audience as we bring our interview to a close here?
I mean, I really appreciate the way you frame that, and thank you for the compliment. I've walked through the fire. I have a lot of battle scars to prove it, and it's just my greatest honor and privilege to be able to share what I've learned along the way. And look, I don't have it all figured out. I'm still learning just like everybody else, but it's really, truly my greatest joy to be able to share what I've learned with other folks and help them along the path with the few things I have figured out.
Awesome, man. Thank you, Mike, for sharing and for being out there and teaching what you learned through your personal experience. And I love what you shared earlier about price things based off of evidence. You could do things based off of evidence-based thought and behavior and action. And it makes me think of like the OODA loop thing that we learned back in the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, bro. This has been a great interview, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate you.
Absolutely.